We turn now to Plato's Parable of the Caves, and let me again urge you to read Andrew Louth's description of and commentary on this parable in the first chapter of the required text of The Origins of the Christian Mystical Tradition. What you have in this web page before you is a division of Plato's parable into separate sections, and I'm only going to highlight, as we move rather briefly through it, first of all, I've chosen some pictures of a real spelunker, someone who does underground cave photography, as a kind of a way of highlighting for us much of the image that Plato describes. He describes, first of all, a kind of strange story. Human beings in an underground cave, a mouth open towards the light, but they don't see that mouth. They don't see that light. If you drop down and move down to the picture that kind of diagrams the state of these poor prisoners, they're all facing a wall. They're chained to seats and unable to move their heads. Behind them there is a fire and a kind of what's called the roadway in that picture, a kind of passageway in which people can walk and perform a kind of shadow play. What Plato is saying is that the prisoners in the cave don't see reality. All they see are the shadows of the fire behind them and whatever stories are being illustrated or performed behind them. They don't see reality. They're living in the darkness. And the story of this parable is what would happen if a person were unchained. If we drop down a little bit to the text that I've highlighted, the whole point of this story is that once one realizes how strange these prisoners are, and please go back and read this parable in detail, Plato says the key is they are like ourselves. They see only the shadows. That's the unenlightened life. That's where we begin before we understand what it is to contemplate, to look beyond the world that we see simply with our physical eyes. Let's drop down now to the next picture, which has above it the word true, he said. In this section of the parable, as you go back and reread it, you'll see that Plato goes on with his story. Suppose someone is unchained and then forced reluctantly, because living in the dark, one doesn't want to see the light. Suppose someone is reluctantly dragged up towards the upper world, out into the light. What will happen, he says, in the paragraph immediately below that picture is, his eyes will be dazzled. At first he won't be able to see realities. Plato goes on to say that he'll have to accustom himself first to look at rather dim things, the stars and reflections, and then slowly over time this individual would be capable of understanding or of seeing bright things, eventually the sunlit day, and eventually even the sun himself. And if you drop down to what I've called Plato's interpretation of his parable, you'll see that for Plato, this is what it's like to ascend into the intellectual, the noetic world, to use the nous, to gradually begin to look beyond appearance and see the innermost truth, the deeper contemplative reality of things. Dropping down a ways further to the little box that says virtue, the path to noetic vision, you'll see here that he describes the effect of this on a person's life as conversion. Metastrophesetai, he says, a word that is very related to or similar to the word for conversion that is used in the New Testament. Metanoesis, literally changing the nous, changing the innermost sense of the self. There's a conversion that has to take place. The individual has to want to get out of the cave and behold the light. Well, what's the fate of the person who does this? He says it's a very problematic faith. If we drop down then to the little box that says in blue, compel contemplatives to return, in this section of the parable, as you go back and read it again, you'll see that Plato says that once a person has seen the light, they'll want to stay there. They'll want to live in this world of beholding the glory of things and not go back to the ordinary cave of existence where people imagine they're seeing realities but are only seeing shadows. But Plato says they must be compelled to return. They must go back. Individuals have to be taken back into the cave. In other words, if we've seen the truth, if we've learned to behold the glory of God in creation, if we've learned that there is more to the world than our own limited vision, then we mustn't just stay there. We have to be willing to carry this truth back to people and show them how they can be unchained, how they can leave their seats in the cave and gradually find their way back into the light that we have seen. And I've given some pictures that show a person re-entering the cave and then hopefully finding again their way out towards the light. The very last section of this parable involves a reminder of the fact that people who are contemplative, who are eager to behold these glorious realities, may not want to have anything to do with the ordinary business of running a government or life in their city. But Plato says they must be compelled to do this. Especially those who have seen the truth are obliged to be involved in the ordinary affairs of life, of seeing to it that justice is done, the life of the city and the life of the state. Very powerful and effective reminders to us that in this ancient tradition, the active and the contemplative were part of a work that everyone engaged in continuously. And those who were most contemplatively gifted, who longed most for the vision of God, were also obliged by that vision to be most actively involved in the work of the betterment of their society and in reaching out to see to the good of their neighbors. We'll now continue in the next lecture with Plato's Myth of Air.